It's always a very moving experience to hear read aloud the names of just a few of the remarkable and diverse group of people who've contributed to the success of the college. The gifts that these people have given have benefited all of us, but not always in the most obvious ways. It's very easy for us to forget that the current model of state-based education is not such an old institution. For such a large part of the college's life, we had little funding from the state, but depended upon the benefactors, some of whom we've heard the names of, who saw that the college was doing a good thing and supported it. One of the benefactors, whose names you've heard, is Sarah, the Duchess of Somerset. Many of you are likely to have seen her portrait, which hangs in the hall. She and her benefactors illustrate some of the things I'm going to say in this address. Although she inherited wealth, she was unlucky in her life. She married twice, and her both husbands died. She had two much hoped for children, both boys, and they died in their infancy as well. She's best known for giving away much of her wealth in support of education. Her portrait is in the hall because she endowed scholarships here and also at Brasenose College in Oxford. But her major benefactions were for children. She set up several schools and included with them funding to allow the children from poor families to attend them. For older children, she set up what she called a broad town charity. This supported children to take up apprenticeships, which she recognized could help raise people permanently out of poverty. The question of what drives giving to support educational philanthropy is something which I'm sure lots of you have thought a little bit about and know that many others have thought about it. Many have argued that altruistic giving is not giving for the benefit of others, but for the benefit of the giver. Philanthropy often brings rewards and status in society. But the Duchess of Somerset already had status, and she had no descendants to inherit any status that she accrued. Equally, repaying a perceived debt may be seen as a driver of philanthropy, but the Duchess of Somerset had no debts to the institutions to which she gave. In many of them, she built from scratch. Many of the benefactors from St. John's never attended the college. So much evidence suggests that altruism is a part of human nature. And these ideas, I think, were probably first set out clearly by the moral philosophers, people like David Hume and Adam Smith, both writing in the 1700s. Hume suggested that what he called sympathy was a major driver of human behavior. He said that the minds of all people are similar in their feelings and operations, so we can assume that you are like me. He said that affectations readily pass from one person to another, and they beget correspondent movements. What Hume called sympathy, today we would call empathy. And its explanation seems intuitive. We're all aware that we recognize emotions in others when we see people experiencing them. And we feel at least a little bit of it, and sometimes a lot of it, ourselves. Now, to me, as a neuroscientist, these ideas are very interesting. And it's interesting that research in neuroscience has provided some empirical evidence for what Hume was proposing, a basic mechanism within the brain, but more basic, perhaps, than Hume thought. Around 20 years ago, a mechanism was discovered that's nowadays referred to as the mirror system within the brain. Neuroscientists studying a part of the brain that was involved in making a particular movement also showed the same form of activity when you made the movement and when you observed the movement made by someone else. This is now widely established at a basic level in terms of movement. Humans have a system in their brain that encourages behavior that imitates the behavior of others. It would be a fairly small jump to imagine that when we see a movement, we can copy it. When we see an emotion, we copy it and experience for ourselves. It's important, however, to realize that this is not a system that's working through rational thought or conscious appraisal or understanding. This mirror system works subconsciously. If you watch a group of people interacting socially, you can see them mirroring each other's movements and behavior very clearly, yet none of them are aware of themselves doing it. So they're doing it without thinking about it, without being consciously aware of it. Perhaps more persuasively, we can see this sort of imitative behavior in babies. We all know that if you smile at a baby, the baby smiles back, mirroring your behavior and appearing to feel your feelings. We take this literally at face value, and we're convinced that the baby sees us and likes us. Now, we cannot know whether this is true, what the baby is really feeling, but the behavior shown in babies is made at an age where, well before they show the ability to make logical decisions or understand rationally what the behavior of this man smiling at them might be representing. So Hume's sympathy seems to be an innate human trait. And since it's innate, we might call it an instinct. An instinct for sympathy, for recognizing the feelings of others. And if we recognize the concerns and upset of others by feeling it ourselves, we're naturally going to be motivated to do what we can to alleviate it. This remarkable system for engendering sympathetic behavior towards others seems likely to contribute towards the motivations for benefaction. Sarah, the Duchess of Somerset, wrote about seeing families in poverty, hence her broad town charity, supporting the apprenticeships that could take the families out of poverty. Giving is a strong instinct, so strong that many benefactors give anonymously. In our reading from Ecclesiasticus, it was recognized that many of our benefactors go unrecognized, and some there may be which have no memorial or who are perished as though they have never been. On a personal level, part of my role in the university depends upon an extreme form of anonymous benefaction that illustrates this point. One of my roles is to teach functional anatomy, neuroanatomy, the structure and function of the brain. In particular, this is an essential part of the training of tomorrow's doctors. But fundamentally, this learning depends upon people who support us by donating their bodies to be used in medical education after they die. This truly is the kindness of strangers. Our medical students have no knowledge of who the donors are, and yet they see their bodies more intimately than they'll have seen any other body before. The gift that our body donors makes comes at a cost. Those who donate their bodies and their families and friends forego some of the usual rituals of a funeral, the shared moments where we come together with emotions of sadness and loss combined with fond remembrance of the lived life. For our donors, all of these take place without the body. Yet despite this, we've never had a shortage of people donating to us. So an instinct for sympathy, help and support for others is a wonderful human trait. It's a fundamental element of most religious teaching, and those of you who've been in the chapel during the last 3 years will of course recognize these thoughts in Christian doctrine. So it's important today that we remember with great thanks the benefactors that made our lives here what they are. But we should also recognize that we also benefit from the gifts of many others who have no memorial.